This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Binkley, Logan Weber, Drew Nixon, Cody Gold, off to see a wedding of Nick Schwartz in California. Good morning, Logan.
Good morning. Let's hope that those guys are staying up to date with their sunscreens.
it gets pretty
couple
bad.
A couple of pale individuals, I have to say, Cody and Alex both. So got to hope that they're not just absolute red scorched earth right now.
Who gets more tanned and burnt? Let's say who gets more burnt, Alex or Cody. I could see Alex
who
getting
gets more
really
burnt.
Alex goes to the pool.
I think Cody gets more burnt.
Really? I know Alex goes to the pool all the time.
Good on him. Just as long as he's got that SPF 500 on.
That's right. Fun show today. The Royals keep winning. We'll talk a lot about that. Kyle Larson of NASCAR. By the way, he's got two wins this year. One of the top racers in NASCAR. He's throwing out the first pitch
today. Let's go, Bink. Let's go.
That's right. That's right. Drew and I will geek out on that. He's throwing out the first pitch at Kauffman Stadium. He'll be joining us at 11. Logan, get all your NASCAR questions in.
I'll do my best. I have to say, we were talking about it in the bullpen before the show. I used to be big into NASCAR when I was a kid. My parents liked NASCAR a lot with my aunt and uncle. They would go to races all the time. I'm not sure I've watched a NASCAR race. I mean, even a partial NASCAR race since probably Jeff Gordon retired.
I actually love it. And the funny thing about Jeff Gordon is I used to come in here for Bob Edwards all the time down at The Rock. He'd come down and he'd go on with The Rock. And I remember somebody was opening the door one day, turned around, said, not, and looked back. It was Jeff Gordon. He was like, the nicest guy in the world. I was like, hey, man. I can't believe that Jeff Gordon just did that. But anyway, it's fun. I love NASCAR. It's one of those things. And hopefully, you know, now that you're back here, and I know you're from here, but you're back here, you go at the Kansas Speedway at some point because it's one of those sports. We've talked about that. Like I told you, NHL is much different. Like if you go to hockey and actually go to the game, mm-hmm. you're like, man, I'm hooked on this. I love it a lot. I think NASCAR is the same way. I think you can enjoy it from many different angles, from the infield, from the press box or the stands, wherever you want to, you can enjoy it. They make it really fan friendly as far as the event. They do a great job with it.
Oh, they do. It's so much fun. I mean, I can remember, like I said, we used to watch a lot of NASCAR when I was younger. We'd watch it on TV, but we would go to races. Like they would go to the Nationwide Series in Newton, Iowa. We would go up there all the time and like stay with my grandma and we would go to the races there. And we went to Kansas Speedway a few different times. I've never been to an actual NASCAR event. We always just went to Nationwide events. So, I'd like to go to a NASCAR. I mean, because they do such a great job with the Nationwide stuff. I can't imagine what a NASCAR race looks like. It's got to be tenfold from what they do. We used to go down, right? You'd go down and they would have all these different things, the vendors and things that you could have. And I can remember they would have like these little games that you could play as a kid where they'd give you, it was basically just like an old like Atari controller was how I would describe it, or a Nintendo 64 controller. And you could control a race car that would go around a much smaller, you know, condensed track. But we used to play that game all the time when I was a kid, when my parents would take us to the races. I just haven't been and haven't been invested in NASCAR for quite a long time. Maybe being back in the Metro will do that.
It's
a hidden gem in this town.
I'm fired up.
It's a hidden gem in this town. Two races, you get the one in the playoff race, too, that you have in the fall. But it's kind of a hidden gem. I mean, it's lucky. I'm lucky Kansas City like has this event. I think it's good for the area. It's fun. Drew lives out by it because that's where he decided he would live, by NASCAR.
Well, last year in this race a year ago, we saw the closest finish in NASCAR history. You know, everybody talks about the Atlanta race and how it was a three-wide finish at the line, but this is the closest finish that we've ever seen here at this Speedway. Of all the ones, Daytona, Talladega, all the close tracks, Darlington, Kansas Speedway has the closest finish. So
and
I think
you,
it's something you can
see
take your pride in, you know?
The tractor trailers pulling in.
Oh, Bink, I saw, as I was driving to the track, or as I was driving into work today, I saw the 7 car, Justin Haley of Spire Motorsports. They were pulling the hauler through. People already camping out yesterday. Yeah, it's one of the, for some reason, it feels like Kansas always delivers well with the crowds with NASCAR, because people come down from Iowa, they come over from Missouri, they got Kansas, of course, you know.
Come down from Omaha as well. It's sort of this centrally located spot.
Yeah, it's a really good spot to have a high quality race where with the car that they have, and we might get into this with Kyle as well.
What's
11,
one thing you want to know from Kyle?
Well, one of the questions that I think
just like, what do you want to know?
Like random things. Song that gets them hyped up. One song he needs to get locked in, got the headphones on before the anthem, before the, you know, the call to get in the car, start your engines and everything.
What if he didn't listen to the music?
What helps get you locked in? Well, okay, well then what helps you get locked in? Like where what gets you from the place of pre-race festivities to, all right, I'm about to go drive this machine that is incredibly fast, incredibly complex. What gets you locked into that, where you're in that zone to go out and get another top 10, another top 5, go out and win a race like he did last year in the spring race?
The one thing I'm always kind of curious about, like their week in life, like PGA players, we know they hop on that plane, they go play golf. That's just them going in their caddy and their clubs, you know, various bags and everything they bring. But NASCAR, you know, they go home very briefly because then they got to go in. Like all these drivers are doing things around the area with their sponsors. You know, if they're sponsored by Bass Pro Shops, whenever they're out there, if they're sponsored by Valvoline with Kyle Larson, so he's probably one of those deals. He's throwing out the first pitch of Royals game. But all these events that you have every single week, it's got to be confusing.
Man, it's one of those things where I don't feel like we give enough credit. Like we look at professional athletes and it's like, oh, I wish I could, right? I wish I could be a professional basketball player, professional football player, a NASCAR driver, whatever it is. But a lot of us don't comprehend what they have to do beyond what they do on the court or on the field or on the track, the sponsorship things, flying across the countries for different promotions and events and things that they have to do to try to drum up business and support and interest in what it is that they do, right? I mean, they're professional athletes. They're also salesmen in a lot of respects as well, because they have to sell their sport and sell their talent to people, whether that be people that are they're trying to pick up sponsorships for or a commercial for, or it's just people that they're, hey, come, please come.
First interview after every race,
they put
all the different hats on. Yeah,
please
like to
come watch the event.
Gatorade,
please,
like
you know,
to thank
turn it on your
parts.
Television set, buy a ticket and come to the Speedway or come to Kauffman or Arrowhead. They have got to sell themselves in a lot of different ways. It's not just about trying to make a left turn at 200 miles an hour, which is damn near impossible in and of itself.
Yeah, and on top of that, somebody mentions that I am going to ask Kyle about this. He's doing the double again this year. He's trying to do the Indy 500, then right afterwards fly to Charlotte to do the Coke 600. So he's going to...
Last year was his first one doing that, wasn't it?
Well, he was going to, but then the race got postponed because of the rain in Charlotte. But he's going to try to drive 1,100 miles in one single day. So that's going to be a lot of fun having Kyle on. Bink, appreciate you for getting him on, too. It's going to be...
Do you ever wonder how they pee when they're in the car?
I mean, that
they don't get out. So,
yeah, I mean, I think they
let it flow.
I think there's a way that they can relieve themselves. Yeah,
I'm sure there is.
I'm sure that there is something designed in that fire suit.
I'm pretty curious about that, actually.
Well, and you mentioned, you know, so we can, again, we'll get to Kyle at 11. The Royals are hot. Of course, they're playing the White Sox. Bink, you've got a text.
The booty call, baby. That's exactly what they are. And if you don't look at the White Sox like a booty call, you're doing all wrong. I know a texter yesterday was very upset. Very upset that the word booty call was used. I've used it several times, not just lately. They were texting Carrington yesterday afternoon. They were texting Dusty and Bob. some dude had his kid in the car. Do you ever listen to our drops at this station? Do you ever listen to the innuendos? Have you ever listened to the boner commercials our dudes do? But yet, when I say booty call, it offends you? Well, that's what they are. The Royals clinched their fifth consecutive series, longest streak of wins in 8 years, since June 9th through 27th, 2017, when they won five straight. They have a franchise record 9 consecutive wins versus the White Sox, in a franchise 10 straight games against them at Kauffman Stadium. As I mentioned, and Carrington brought up, we've had two NFL drafts since the White Sox beat the Royals. That is the ultimate. Hey, when you win, when you're in the playoffs by a game over Seattle last year, it matters hammering the White Sox like it does. But they have had total, the Royals didn't play that well last night. I mean, pitching wise, yes, but they haven't been hitting the ball well. And I think the White Sox are pitching better this year. Clearly they are. But, man, watching the Royals and White Sox, you wait for that meltdown. I waited for that meltdown last night. It didn't matter. They actually were doing reverse of that when they were coming back at the end of the game, which was surprising.
Yeah, Carlos Estevez, he was doing his best to try to give up the game last night, and thankfully he was able to hold it down just enough to come out with the win. But and I saw a lot of people last night. I heard it yesterday during Vern's post-game show. I've seen it on social media last night and this morning. People complaining about the way in which the Royals won last night and the way in which they've won the first three games of this series. Can we shut up for a minute? Like, we're complaining about the way a team wins? Are we serious? A W is a W and L's an L. Guess what? If you have more W's than L's, you probably make the postseason.
And in 5 years, when you look back at it, they're not going to care how it was done.
I don't care.
W's and L's, like you said.
I don't care how the Royals have won these three games against the Chicago White Sox. Do you know what I do care about? That they've won the first three games of this four-game set against the White Sox, and they get an opportunity to go for a sweep tonight and get to 7 games above 500 before we hit the second week of May. That's what matters to me, and that's what should matter to everybody else as well. You can complain about the way in which they won tonight, or last night. Guess what? The pitching nails again. Michael Wacha, 7 scoreless last night. He was unbelievable. Bobby Witt, 2-run bomb. Mikel Garcia, another 2-hit game. And you remember all those people that were complaining about Vinny Pasquantino? I've seen it this week on this show. I've seen people text in and be like, should they consider calling up Jack Caglione and putting him at first base?
Which, if he did this in June or July, you wouldn't have cared.
Yeah, I'm not sure that Vinny's the guy anymore. On April 29th, Vinny Pasquantino was hitting 174 after an 0-for-4 game against the Tampa Bay Rays. Now it's May 8th, and he's hitting 210. After another 2-hit game yesterday, he has got hits in 4 of his last 5 games, including 2 2-hit games and a 3-hit game. We need to relax a minute. A W's a W, an L's an L. And right now, the Royals are getting a hell of a lot more W's than they are L's. Somebody in the text line just said it. You would much rather win ugly than lose pretty.
That's right. That's right. 5 consecutive series wins, though. That's the important thing. Go out and win series, they say. Whether you sweep them or 2 out of 3, whatever. But they've been rolling. They have the best record in baseball since the 20th. They send MJ down. This team's been on a roll ever since. People feel more comfortable being on this team. Vinny is a matter of time. We said it, man. It's a matter of time. This guy's a hitter. This guy's a true hitter. This guy's a proven hitter. This guy's a proven 97 RBI guy.
Yeah.
Last year before he got hurt. It's going to happen. You know what? This makes, and Bobby's already great. But when you have that kind of protection behind him, it gets even better for Bobby when Vinny starts to hit. It's a good thing. But people will complain. I do want to talk about this later because I was curious about this because I heard, you know, Dusty and Bob talking about Vern's show, you know, the text he was getting and people complaining because they were. And social media was a dumpster fire, as usual, 2 nights ago when the Royals weren't doing well against the White Sox. And then they kind of came back. Well, they did. They came back and won the 9th inning. And then everybody loved them again. It's like you hate him, then you love him. And Estevez could do no wrong, and then all of a sudden, last night, he does wrong. It's how are they, and we'll talk about it later, but I'm curious how people are going to do with the Chiefs. Like, if the Chiefs aren't making the AFC title game or the Super Bowl, because it's all you've done in the last 7 years, how are you going to handle it? Because it still could be a damn good team. They just got beat by another damn good team that's, oh, by the way, paid on scholarship as well. Not scholarship, you know what I'm talking about, but paid professional athletes. It can't happen. It hasn't happened lately, but are you getting too spoiled? Are you getting too spoiled? I mean, let's not forget these Royals, you know, lost 100 games, 106 games a couple years ago. Yes, they made the playoffs last year. much better taking these wins than the losses.
You've won 14 of your last 16 games. Who cares how you won 14 of your last 16 games? As long as you're getting it done, right? This is a Royals team that 3 weeks ago everybody was beeping and moaning about because they were 8-14. They were off to a slow start. MJ Melendez can't hit. Hunter Renfroe can't hit. This, that, and the other. Vinny's off to a slow start. The pitching is eh. Everybody other than Bobby was hitting the ball well, or was hitting the ball poorly. And now you've won 14-16. You're staring down the barrel of a sweep, and you get to host the Boston Red Sox for 3 games: Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Good old Richard Fitz comes in and pitches against the Royals.
You've done everything right since April 20th. You were the best team in baseball since April 20th. This Royals team collectively is hitting up over 275 since April 20th. The pitching it's the best pitching staff in Major League Baseball probably to begin this year.
Probably the best we've ever seen in Kansas City.
Yes.
At this point.
I mean, they're unbelievable.
But keep in mind, two out of the top four. You had two starters in the All-Star game that were Royals.
Right.
I mean, you had two of the top four in the Cy Young. When have you ever had that happen? And all these shutouts, I thought it was going to be another shutout last night, to be honest with you. I was like, oh my, this team is just rolling on getting shutouts, something we haven't seen before, but they're just killing it with the shutouts.
They are. And Estevez, you know,
didn't get one last night.
And you've sort of seen him lately, I guess, having a little bit more trouble. I mean, not entirely. I mean, he gave up 3 earned runs against the Colorado Rockies on April 22nd. This is only the 3rd game in which he's pitched this year that he's given up an earned run. And he still picked up his 11th save of the year, and he's only got 2 blown saves. So he's been pretty outstanding. He's got a 2.65 ERA. What makes this Royals team, the pitching-wise, more special than maybe a year ago? You mentioned that Reagans and Lugo were both Cy Young finalists. Yes, but Chris Bubich is incredible to begin this year. Michael Wacha just threw another gem yesterday, 7 scoreless innings. Those two have probably been the 2 best pitchers on the staff so far. Michael Lorenzen is doing his job. He's got a sub-4 ERA. And then the bullpen this year compared to this time last year, night and day difference. Lucas Ersig, outstanding. Carlos Estevez doing his job pretty admirably, although he did absolutely struggle last night.
Well, put it this way about Wacha. He's now allowed, since the start of last season, he's allowed 3 earned runs or fewer, right, in 32 of 37 starts.
Pretty good.
3 runs or fewer, 32 of 37 starts, matching with the guy that won the Cy Young, Tarik Skubal.
Wow.
That is some high company for Michael Wacha that kind of gets under-talked about between Cole Reagans and Seth Lugo, of course, but yes. He's that good.
Yeah, he's only given up 1 such game this year where he gave up more than 3 earned runs, and that was that April 5th game against the Orioles, and that was one that the Royals got smoked the entirety of that game, but gave up 1 earned run against Cleveland, 2 against Minnesota, gave up 3 in 5 2/3 against New York, and has now pitched scoreless performances in 2 of his last 3 games. He threw 6 scoreless innings against the Astros on the 26th of April, and threw 7 scoreless innings last night. The craziest part, dude had like 84 pitches. In 7 innings of work, he only had 84 pitches. I know that we don't see guys throw complete games anymore, but Michael Wacha quite literally could have possibly thrown a complete game last night, going 7 scoreless innings while only throwing 84 pitches. He had complete and total command of everything in his arsenal last night.
Obviously, we know how bad the White Sox were last year, historically bad, but this dropped the White Sox, America's booty call, to 10-27 to match the 2018 White Sox for their 2nd worst start through 37 games in franchise history. That's how bad they're parlaying last season for the White Sox. It's what I call them because that's what it is, man. It's a given. When you play the White Sox, it's a given. They're a feel-good story. Got the Royals rolling last year, off to kind of a rocky start. Go play the White Sox, sweep them, go on a 7-game winning streak. It is what it is. If I want to say the word, it's a booty call, it's because it is. It's a given.
The crazy part is
the White Sox suck.
As bad as the Chicago White Sox are, they're actually 3 games up on the Colorado Rockies for the worst record in baseball.
For now, until the 4th of July.
The Rockies are 6-29. Woof.
4th of July weekend, brother.
They have given, the Rockies have given up 203 earned runs this year, which somehow isn't even the worst in Major League Baseball. The Washington Nationals, Miami Marlins have each given up even more earned runs than that. And man, I cannot help but continue to look at the Baltimore Orioles. And I'm just wondering what is going on. Like, what has gone so catastrophically wrong with the Baltimore Orioles?
Pitching. It's a team that started feeling themselves because they started to get good. So they talked about, they couldn't parlay it. It's one thing about the Chiefs. Like, you parlay success into another year's success. It's tough to do in professional sports because we've seen so many teams win and then fall off the map. We've seen it lately with the NFL. Buccaneers beat the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, fell off the next year.
We can blame the pitching,
Rams,
yes.
Fell off.
But they can't hit either. Fun fact for everybody. Would you like to know who the Baltimore Orioles leader in batting average is?
Jackson Holliday?
It is not. It is former Royals legend. Oh, I say that strong, like, you know, very, 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 you know, facetiously. Ryan O'Hearn, yes, is hitting .304 for the Baltimore Orioles right now.
.272, something like that, or he was.
He's got 7 bombs and 14 RBIs to begin the year and 92 ABs. So, yeah, Ryan O'Hearn is the team's leader in batting average. Ramon Urias is hitting .292. But, I mean, look at this. Jackson Holliday's hitting .263. Gunnar Henderson's hitting .252. Cedric Mullins is hitting .237. Adley Rutschman's hitting .212. Ryan Mountcastle is hitting .205.
He was picked number one the year Bobby was picked by the Royals.
Correct.
That's the same year they got Gunnar, too. They got him in the second round. That was a hell of a draft.
It was.
For the Orioles.
And those two guys, as good as they were last year, you thought they were going to take massive leaps forward. And I know that he's struggling in Toronto right now, but I think that we have kind of undersold the loss of Anthony Santander to this Orioles lineup because his power bat isn't there to kind of protect some of those other guys in the order. And I think
almost
that
the guy
causing,
that was here,
it's causing some turmoil. I know I was a very strong Anthony Santander advocate. In fact, the first time that I came in and co-hosted for CDOT on the drive, Rob and I had a lengthy conversation about how I was hoping that the Royals would make a run on a guy like Anthony Santander. And I'm like, hey, come on. Like, I would love to see a power bat like that in to protect Vinny and Bobby and Salvi. The show ends. This was right after he had signed with Toronto. And right as the show was ending was when Ken Rosenthal came out with the article saying that the Royals had offered him
Ken
a deal.
Bomb.
But they just couldn't. They couldn't compete with what Toronto was offering him. And I'm like, oh, dude, you got to be kidding me.
Another thing, Logan, I don't know if you saw this. Drew and I were talking about this morning. It's in the NFL world, right? It's the Rams are taking a trip to Maui. You might say, oh, big deal. Who cares? The Rams are going over to Maui. I saw this, saw some other people from Kansas City talking about this. See some people talking about it nationally. Like, why would the Rams take a mini camp and go to Maui, right? And I started thinking, is this a new wave? Because I thought it was interesting. I started looking up the Rams because they are going to Maui. Mm-hmm. And like Hawaii Tourism's paying for some. It's like, that's incredibly expensive. Because you're taking a ton of guys. The training camp roster is 90, right? You're taking all the, those are some, well, it would take one jumbo jet to take it. But it has taken a lot of personnel over to Hawaii and all your equipment. And I started thinking, all right, first of all, it's a waste of money. But then I thought, I don't know, man. Is this the way the NFL's going? Like, I saw it this year and I started looking up. That's the Rams' actual mandatory mini camp during that period they're going to be in Hawaii. And I started thinking about it. I was like, okay. You know they're just going to be loading that place up. Mandatory mini camps are not where fans get to go to.
No.
You get to go to training camp and all that. And you'll see on the news, you'll see, well, the news sportscasters, they get to show the guy stretching usually or in shells or something. They don't actually get to see when there's full 11 on 11.
Right.
But to invite fans to a mini camp to me is interesting because they'll sell tickets for this and everything else and it'll be a big deal. And I thought, this might actually be genius. You'll actually probably start seeing other teams do this. It's a way to get your product. It's the NFL, once again, thinking outside the box. Again, this is just the Rams doing this. But it could be very beneficial for them, especially, you know, getting that Hawaii market to like the Rams. I understand why they're doing it, and these guys will get the free trip. There's a couple things that go with it. When you're in the undrafted free agent world, that's when you have to make the calls, hey, will you come play for us? Because being an undrafted free agent sometimes better. It's actually better than being a seventh-round pick, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
The money's oftentimes better. Also, you can choose which team you're going to. And it's a race at the end. Andy Reid had to get on the phone in Carl Brenning's stool, the tight end from Clemson. Mm-hmm. Like, rarely does the head coach get on and call a guy to be an undrafted free agent. But he did. He knew it'd matter. He knew he needed to do that. John Schneider and the Seahawks, back when they were rolling everything and be a Legion of Zoom, boom, and all that, they were sending out brochures of why you should come play for the Seahawks to undrafted free agents. It's important. But if you can guarantee, you know, a nice little trip to Hawaii and everything else, hey, you might get cut or whatever, but you get a hell of a trip to Hawaii going forward. But I can see NFL teams doing this style. When I saw that, I was like, I just kind of poo-pooed it. But then I was like, started thinking about it. I was like, this is pretty creative, actually.
While it's not the exact same thing, I feel like it plays off of what we see organizations do in other sports, right? Major League Baseball, they go down to the South. They go to Arizona. They go to Florida. They go to Carolina for spring training, and they do all those things, right? They go down nice weather, all these different places to try to drum up support. Fans can go down there, watch the games, all those sorts of things, right? In the NBA, you'll hear about teams taking like international trips, right? The Chicago Bulls used to do it all the time in the 90s with Jordan and those great teams that they had, is they would go to Europe, or they would go to Asia, and they would take their teams over there, not only to, you know, give them a great trip and a great experience, but also because it increased the popularity of their sport and it drew attention to it. And if we know anything, it's about, you know, Hawaii and American Samoa and places like that have become much more invested in the game of football. I mean, we've seen outstanding players in the last 25, 30 years in the NFL come from those cultures that maybe weren't coming previously, right? Troy Polamalu and Penei Sewell, and the list goes on and on and on with those sorts of guys. And so to go to a place like Hawaii and increase the support of your organization, I mean, right? I mean, the Los Angeles Rams, you got a guy like Puka Nacua within your organization, a guy who comes from a Polynesian background. It makes so much sense. And you're right,
I can see the team's
great,
doing this.
It's a great trip for your guys. And I'm trying to picture, like, where are the Chiefs going? Like, where would the Chiefs go? Yeah.
Well, my big thing is, I don't bring it up. My big thing is, since they're going to go to 18 games. And now teams, all the international games, we're expanding that now. Brazil, you'll see them in Ireland now, in Spain and all this, right? Mm-hmm. It was to put them on college campuses. Take one game a year and make it like the NHL stadium series and have them there. But it's another topic for another day. The other things, I want to see a training camp, because they let the teams that are playing first, like in Canton, and if you're playing a Thursday night game, you can start training camp a week before the others. But I always wanted to see like a Midnight Madness type thing with training camp at NFL Network. I like, you know, doing the, because fans, I think, would go up and tailgate it and go to that kind of thing. So that's something that I would actually like to see.
They don't do training camp anywhere else at other places. Like, the Chiefs are one of the few teams, if not the only team, that goes.
No, they're one of the few. There's like a handful now, like four or five.
I think that idea, as great as it sounds, and I think all of us can agree that it sounds cool.
Well, you can still do it. It doesn't matter where you're doing. You can still do it at the complex. You can still do it in Cincinnati, where the guys have to walk across a real road to practice.
Yeah, but you're not going to tailgate on a real road. You know, it just kills the vibe, where I think this is like, it almost serves as a training camp where you're actually going somewhere. It's like a team camaraderie thing. Like, as much as it is to build up the NFL brand, it's let's go take a trip. Let's have some fun. Let's get to know each other a little bit more in a place that's different, that's cool. It's Hawaii, so a lot of people probably haven't been there in the first place. You know, being able to go and visit a place that not too many people have been, it's gorgeous. You know,
yeah.
It makes sense for you to do that. And I feel like the Chiefs have St. Joe. That is their, I know that it sounds a lot worse than Hawaii, but it's their camaraderie trip. Like that's what it is. Like, teams have training camp in the same cities that, like, they go and they sleep in their own bed. They don't have to worry about any of the
I
other
get it.
Stuff.
There's a couple things too. And also with the NFL, when they go to 18 games, Drew, they're going to shorten preseason from 3 to 2, right? You know, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And the Chiefs won't do the practice with another team. They don't like to do that. They practice against themselves. But I thought, if the NFL mandated you had to scrimmage with another team, that could take place instead of a preseason game, I think the teams would get more value from that and be something kind of fun.
I think that'll happen a lot more.
We come back. The text line was going nuts last night, so it made me think, what would people do if the Chiefs started to do a slide? People lose their minds? We'll talk about that next. Welcome back, Cody and Golden. But it's Jay Binkley, Logan Weber, Drew Nixon with you now. Kyle Larson, NASCAR driver Kyle Larson, of course, Kansas Speedway in action this week, and he's throwing out the first pitch at a Kauffman Stadium today. The Royals, an afternoon game against the lowly Chicago White Sox. We'll talk to Kyle about 11. You heading to the K? today in between your night shift?
No, not today. I'll be going on Sunday, though.
Are you?
Yeah, for Mother's Day. My wife and I are going to be taking my father-in-law, my mother-in-law.
What a gift.
And
nice. What a gift.
How about that?
My brother and sister-in-law, my niece and nephew. So, yeah,
that's awesome.
We're going to have a whole group going out to Kauffman on Sunday to take in Royals Red Sox, which is an interesting one for me because I actually grew up a Red Sox fan, but have slowly since I've moved away from that growing up in Kansas City. And of course, you know, I was a Red Sox fan because Dustin Pedroia played there, and once his career kind of derailed itself,
you stopped rooting for
the Red Sox. I do.
You got a Boston lean.
I guess so.
Wife is from that area.
Did you have a tough night last night?
Huh?
You and Mac both.
Drew,
Logan,
I'm not okay.
Got to mention it because Mac was going through it this morning.
Mac was having a hard time with it.
I'm not doing okay.
I was thinking about you because Mac like lives and dies by the Celtics, and I was like, what about Logan? He's going to be struggling too.
100 threes attempted in two games.
That's sweet.
And you've made 25 of them.
Most through two games, yeah. The funniest thing was after the game, Joe Mazzulla was like, I mean, we got some good looks. We just got to execute a little bit better. So there was no thought process in, hey, I told the guys they need to get to the rim a little bit more.
No, because that's not his style. I mean, his philosophy is
live and die by
chuck
the three.
And duck, man. It is live by the three, die by the three. What I don't understand, I'm just going to get on my soapbox for a minute. Kristaps Porzingis averaged 18-9 this season. Why is he only playing 14 minutes against the Knicks? Why is he only... Al Horford. I love Al Horford. I love this man. Why is Al Horford playing twice as many minutes in an Eastern Conference semifinal as Kristaps Porzingis? He's healthy. Play the man.
I agree.
You're killing me, Joe. Listen...
This series is going to
seven. Got him a ring last year.
You know
I love it.
It's going seven.
My boy, you have got to stop. I like Peyton Pritchard. I don't need that man throwing up 9 threes a game. Not right now. Not right now. Get to the rack. Draw fouls. Shoot layups.
Logan, they haven't even been able to get a shot off in the last two possessions of those games.
No.
In game one and two, they... couldn't even get a shot off.
No, I mean, Mikal Bridges has just become the greatest defender with less than 10 seconds to go in a game ever.
Well, Bob has been rooting for the Knicks, and of course, Mac with the Celtics made an interesting,
they've been having an interesting dynamic
there in the morning
show. I promise I'm not a Knicks fan. However, if the Pacers do end up beating Cleveland and the Celtics come back to win the series, Logan.
I was a Kansas City Kings fan,
Drew. So are you a Sacramento Kings fan?
It's old. No, I dropped them a bad habit when they moved to Sacramento. My free agency was clear at that point.
So you have a take, Bink, regarding people or fans who...
They're mad.
I think you're a little bit worried what the reaction will be when the Chiefs...
Yeah.
We don't know when it's going to be.
What's going to happen?
Inevitably, they're going to lose a game in the divisional round or in the
wild
card round. What are you worried for people? Well,
it just... You hear it. And you hear it. You know, Vern's post-game show, people like to call in, upset, they'll lose a game. They don't care. They've won 5 straight series. That doesn't matter to people. It doesn't matter. They're winning. They're beating professional teams. They just want to complain. And you get spoiled at a point. Do we forget how long it was in this town where teams were bad? Do we forget that the area between Kauffman and Arrowhead was the Boulevard of Broken Dreams? Do we forget that gap between 85 and 2015 with the Royals? Do we forget the fact the Chiefs had made one AFC title game since Lynn Dawson days.
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't even alive when they won that Super Bowl, and I'm old. And 93 season, 94 AFC title game in Buffalo, do we forget what an honor it was to get there? They've had 7 straight AFC title games and probably could have hosted all of them, too. Of course, that one 2 years ago was in Baltimore because of Kadarius Mondesi Tony dropping footballs in 2 games. It cost the Chiefs home field advantage because they would have had it over the Ravens because they had a better AFC record. So that game would have been playing here without Kadarius Dropius Tony on this team. It would have been here. But 7 straight AFC title games. I know from doing the Chiefs post game since I got here 2012 and seeing the text rolling through the game. After the game, people are pissed. I've got a lot of fire Andy Reid's, Logan. And I'm like, okay, well, tell me who you want then.
You can't pay attention to those.
No, I can't, but I respond by tell me who's better. I said, tell me another 5 or 10 you'd get.
That's
Tell me.
All I heard after Super Bowl Sunday. I was doing post game after the Chiefs Eagles Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And the number of, do we need to reevaluate Brett Veach?
Do we need to reevaluate?
We need to fire Matt Nagy. We need to do this.
A GM that's gone to 5 Super Bowls and won 3. Do we need to reevaluate
really,
the decision?
Folks, you just broke the franchise record for single season wins. And you got to a third straight Super Bowl after winning the first two. What in the world are you possibly complaining about right now? I mean,
well, and also this too, Bill Belichick holds the record for postseason wins with 31. Andy Reid's number 2 with 28. So you want to fire that guy? You want to fire that guy? Because the people will melt down. Like, if they don't make the AFC title game, we'll say they just win one playoff game, right? And lose the next round. You don't have the AFC title game here. I mean, Super Bowl parties, it used to suck, man, with Tom Brady in them all the time. I mean, still get together with everybody and watch them because it's the Super Bowl and you'd watch the big game, right? Get excited about it. But it's much different with the Chiefs. The Chiefs have become we do. It's become a holiday tradition. It's become a family tradition. Who's bringing the what? Is the calls and the texts to go around the family group members. All right, let's get together for the game and watch it. It's become the fiber of what this town is all about.
100%.
What are you going to do if you don't get there? If these texts that keep coming in. You know, I heard Bob and Dusty talking about it with the text to Vern. I looked at the text line. I was like, whoa, Vern has to deal with that. And what are they going to do with the Chiefs? Because I've seen it, and people do melt down, and then they change their tune. Because then the Chiefs come back and win.
Right.
Like the whole game, it'd be like, oh, they suck. Reed sucks. Mahomes, all this, blah, 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 blah. And then they'd win the game. And then it's kind of like, okay, now what? Now what's your complaint? Now what are you going to complain about now that they actually won the game?
It's just one of those things. There's something that, there's a saying out there about being blind and rich. That's kind of what it feels like with some, right? And I'm not saying that that's everybody. In fact, it may not even be the majority of people, right? This feels like a potential case of a silent majority and a vocal minority in this case, where the people who are the most wrong are often the loudest. I cannot believe that that's the case, right? This in Kansas City, it's been unbelievable over the last 10 years. Watching 12 years, that's watching what's happened here in Kansas City from the 14 World Series run to the 15 World Series victory to what has occurred with the Kansas City Chiefs since Andy Reid and Brett Veach arrived, right? Making the playoffs and winning the AFC West year after year, even before Mahomes arrived, right? And then Mahomes gets here and all of a sudden it's not just about winning the division. It's AFC championship games for 7 consecutive years. It's getting to a Super Bowl 5 times. It's whenever the smallest, most minute sort of thing goes wrong, all of a sudden everybody believes the sky is falling.
And the national media too, because they won't pick the Chiefs as all the Chargers picks for the division. When the Chiefs have gone to the AFC title game, beat them. Beat them.
Yeah.
Yeah, they win 15 games. Yes, they got rolled in the Super Bowl of the Eagles, but you know what? They still win. They're still AFC champions. Beat them.
I definitely think it's some of the frustration stems from the we've seen them win it and be in the game all of these times where they don't. Sometimes fans might not know how good they have it until they don't have it anymore. Somebody on the text line said they were a Cardinals fan. They're a Cardinals fan, and from 2000 to 2015, it was, you know, NLCS or bust, and now it's really tough because, you know, they aren't able to make those runs anymore. And then you look back and say, man, we had it really good at that time, where the fact that Chiefs fans are in it the way that they are and able to enjoy every single season as a divisional win, as a AFC title game appearance, as a Super Bowl appearance, like it's, you expect it so much that if you don't even get there, you lose in the game. It's very disappointing, but 15 years, 20 years down the line, or post Patrick Mahomes playing career, however long he continues to play at this rate, because he's going to play for at least another 10, you would think, maybe 15.
He's one of those guys that's cut differently. You got to pull him off the field.
I think people will look back and be like, man, we had it really good at this time, because at some point the dynasty's just not going to be there anymore. That's just the way that it's going to go. And I think that that's where fans, not that they get blinded to your point,
right,
by how good they are, but I think that's a good way to phrase it, where they don't really realize how good the Chiefs actually have it right now, how good the fan base has it right now compared to that of other teams like the Cowboys fans.
And how difficult it is doing every
those
year.
Wins. Yeah. There are people who are like the Patriots fans and the Cardinals fans and all those other
Cowboys fans are still holding on to that 30 years later. Yeah. I got a couple of points. One, I think that a lot of Chiefs and even some Royals fans now, based off what's happened here in the Metro and the amount of winning that's been done over the last, 7, 8 years, 10 years for the Chiefs and the last couple of years, with the 14 and 15 runs and then this last year and this year sandwiched in between some really bad years for the Royals, is I think that there are Chiefs fans out there who have seemingly forgotten, or maybe they are deliberately trying to forget what it was like before.
21 years without winning a playoff.
Yeah, they're trying.
People that were born were legally drinking in a bar, Logan, in the meantime that they hadn't won a playoff game.
That was me. Not quite, but pretty damn close.
I was going to graduation, sitting there going, this guy's never seen a playoff win.
Yeah, I it's one of those things. I think that whether it's deliberate or inadvertent, you're forgetting about the Brody Croyle years. You're forgetting about Elvis Gerback. You're forgetting about, moving on from Rich Gannon for whoever, drafting Blackledge in the first round, right? We're forgetting about what it was to be a Chiefs fan between Len Dawson and Patrick Mahomes. And some of that for good reason, right? For good reason. The second thing I have is somebody said this in the text line, and I want to revise it a little bit. The person in the text line said, it's like having a straight A student and they get a C on a test. I think it's a little bit different than that. With this Chiefs team and like this year, right, going 15-2, getting to a third straight Super Bowl after winning two straight, and you get blown out by the Eagles, because that's what it was. They got blown out, embarrassed. It reminds me of like when you're in high school and you've got a friend, you got that buddy of yours, that girl in your friend group who is a tremendous student, right? She's like trying to get valedictorian. They got 109% in the class or whatever. You take a test and everybody's going around the group, right? And they're like, oh, what'd you get on your math test? And somebody's like, oh, I got a 91, I got an 86, I got an 84, I got an 88. And they get to this person and they're sitting there in the back of the room and they're shaking their head and they're furious. And you're like, why? What happened? Did you get a bad grade? And they're like, oh, I got a 97. I'm so mad. I want to punch you in the mouth right now. Like, that's what some of these Chiefs fans sound like at the moment. Like, you got to somewhere nobody's ever been before and you're still complaining.
It's amazing. It's like your panties getting in a wad. People like to complain about everything, and they do. And the one thing is that people don't realize is just how damn difficult it is to do what Andy Reid does each and every year. He doesn't sniff Coach of the Year, right? He's not even mentioned. Kevin Stefanski has won it twice. Andy Reid has won it once. Once in his career, he won it in Philadelphia. One time. Belichick's actually won like three. Stefanski's won it twice. Matt Nagy has been Coach of the Year as many times as Andy Reid. Doug Peterson, same thing. But Andy Reid's number two all-time in postseason wins. Fourth all-time in actual NFL wins. To be good every year is tougher than having a crap season, and that's what teams do. You have a crap season, all of a sudden you're good, right? You win 10 games, oh, you're Coach of the Year. Because you turned this team around, it was so bad. Then to be good every single year, to have a bullseye on your back every single year, to be the team that every team goes and game plans and beats, that is tougher than sucking and then being good. But that's evidently what we do in society is making Coach of the Year, is you do that. Brett Veach, Super Bowl 57, parade, holds up Lombardi, says this is what a rebuild looks like.
Yeah.
Because he was rebuilding the team. He had Najee Johnson that seventh round, Jalen Watson in the seventh round, Isaiah Pacheco in the seventh round, and they were contributing to the Chiefs playing football. They weren't slowing down. Like some of these teams, the Buccaneers win the Super Bowl, then they go in the back of the milk carton. Rams win the Super Bowl, they don't parlay it. We've seen so many teams win a Super Bowl and not be good. We've seen the Bengals. Oh, they're taking steps. They actually went to the Super Bowl. They didn't make the damn playoffs last year.
Yeah.
But they continue to do it every year and make the AFC title game 7 years. When all of a sudden you don't make it, people want to get mad and they want to complain because their expectations are out of whack. They're out of whack. They become Kansas basketball fans.
Ooh.
It's what they've done. Not in the Final Four. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. We don't care. But doing what they're doing is impossible. It's more than any other team in any other sport can say to be that good consistently every year and not have the downfall means you're doing it in the front office. You're doing it with the coaching staff and you're doing it with the players. Number 15. I don't care. It's got a text. Mahomes number 4 in the power rankings for players. I don't care. And last year when they did the NFL Top 100 vote, the players, they voted in like November. Remember, he was not great around Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
But then turned around and he actually went out and won a Super Bowl, which is the end-all, be-all, actually winning the Super Bowl. Very cool when you actually win Super Bowl rings or talk about them like Joe Burrow and Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. They can sit around at that little loser table and talk about what it would be like to win a Super Bowl. But to be good every single year, you're going to melt down, or do you understand, man, sometimes you're just not the best? Because that's what happens in the NFL. And we're lucky to have what's going on with the Chiefs. Damn lucky what's happening with the Royals at this point as well.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I'm sitting here looking at this list of NFL coaches of the year. This might be the most useless. This might be the most meaningless, useless award in the history of football. Like you said, Andy Reid's only won the award once. Kevin Stefanski's won it twice. Never won a Super Bowl. Ron Rivera's won it twice. Never won a Super Bowl. Bruce Arians has won it twice. Never won a Super Bowl.
He did once.
I guess he did win one. Dan Reeves has won it twice. Never won a Super Bowl. Let's go down here even further. Chuck Knox won it three times.
Ground Chuck.
Never won a Super Bowl.
People don't respect how tough it is to be good when you're when you have the bulls on your back. They don't respect that. But it is tougher being good every year than having good years. Because Vandy Reed came out and just won seven games. Guess what? He'd be the coach of the year the next year. That would happen. Because he'd get the team to the playoffs, all of a sudden he'd win coach of the year. Does that make him a better coach? Now, what makes him a better coach is doing it consistently every year when you have those expectations to keep on winning. And guess what? You keep on winning. The fact is, his bad year in Kansas City was 9-7. They were two games over 500. That's the one year he didn't make the playoffs in Kansas City, 2014. The one year he didn't make it. But he still finished two games over 500.
Yeah.
But that sky is falling. I'm curious how people react. I'm curious that their expectations are Super Bowl or bust every year.
For some, yes. That's where we have hit at this point.
Damn it, Drew, give me a relaxer.
Yeah, I was gonna say
some blue chew or something. I can't say that. Text on to get mad.
You need to relax. Like just relax a little bit. We got Kyle Larson coming on.
That'd be fun.
You gotta be locked in, Bink, when Kyle calls in, all right? You gotta be locked in.
I will be locked in. Give me some blue chew. Kyle Larson next. Welcome back, Jay Binkley, Logan Weber, Drew Nixon producing the operation. You can hear Logan actually at the Royals game and Vern as well tonight. You just can't get enough, man.
Can't get enough. Got to get in front of a microphone.
What are you going to do in the downtime?
Take a nap. I don't know.
Take a nap.
Eat lunch.
Take it here.
Play some video games. Unexciting.
I've actually slept here before.
You slept here? Okay.
Well, Kramer and I had like post game till like 2 or 3 a.m. one night or something. And I was with Kling the next morning. I was with Kling the next morning. So obviously you get here about 4:30 or 5 anyway. So, you know, what's the point of driving and then coming back, you know what I'm saying? Because you don't want to fall asleep. Because asleep, you're screwed. So just go to Quick Trip, get a Mountain Dew or something, and boom.
There have been some times where I've considered it during my radio career. There were some time we did a radiothon in Springfield for a couple of years.
Radiothon, you'd have to.
Man, it was 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. and then you turned around and had to do a 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. the next day, 24 consecutive hours on air, where you definitely thought about it. Or some of those days where I was working till like 9, 10 o'clock at night and then had to be back in the office at 6 a.m. It's like, do I really even want to drive home? But my house was like 15 minutes away from the station, so it just didn't make sense to
make it nice and easy.
Yeah, sleep on the floor or something.
All right, pleasure to be joined now by a guy who's, well, there's been 11 races in NASCAR, top 10 in 8 of them. 7 times he's been top 5. 2 wins this year as well. He's also won twice at Kansas Speedway. Talking about Kyle Larson. What's up, Kyle?
Hey, how are you guys?
Hey, we're doing good, man. So you're going to be throwing the first pitch out at Kauffman Stadium in a little bit.
Yeah, that'll be fun. I haven't done that in a while, but
it's not easy.
My daughter turned 7 yesterday and she wanted to have a little baseball party. So we had a little scrimmage baseball game with her and her friends. So I got to throw the ball a little bit.
You know, it's one of those things too, Kyle. It's like, did you practice the distance you'll be throwing? Are we throwing from the hill or will you move up a little bit?
I mean, if they let me throw from the hill,
okay, they will.
I feel like that's what you have to do. So
yeah, but you know how it is. He bounces it. It's gonna be social media and all that. You know how that works.
Yeah, I don't think I'll get too out of control though, like some of them. So,
well, it's cool to have you out there at Kauffman Stadium. Are you a baseball fan at all?
I would say, yeah. I mean, I'm a fan. I don't get to follow like every game. I mean, they play a ton, but
yeah.
Especially when the playoffs roll around, I think playoff baseball is super exciting. So, yeah, love watching that. And that's usually when my time of the year kind of is slowing down too, where I'm not racing so much dirt racing, and I can be at home on the couch watching or whatever.
Because you like racing anywhere and everywhere, Kyle. It's kind of how you're wired. And big thanks to NASCAR too and Matt Humphrey. You guys are awesome. We love having you on. We love having the Speedway right here in Kansas City, having two races a year. This is unbelievable. I've always wanted to ask guys though, Kyle, and especially guys like you, kind of at the top of your profession. Like PGA players, it's tough on them, but they don't travel as much. Their caddy goes, they bring a couple bags of clubs and everything. But here you are throwing out the first pitch at Royal Stadium. You guys have sponsorship appearances and stuff to do during the week. Do you get to go home for like 48 hours or anything before you head to the next track?
Your typical kind of week is if you're only doing NASCAR, Cup Series racing, your typical week would be, you fly to the track on Friday or fly to the state that you're racing on Friday. If you don't have any other, media obligations earlier in the week where you go earlier. But anyways, yeah, we'll practice and qualify Saturday, race Sunday, and then you get home late Sunday night. Usually have meetings on Mondays, and then you have, whatever, you're doing to prep for the week ahead the next few days. But for me, I'm a little different because I race, a lot of dirt track stuff outside of NASCAR. Yeah. So I'm usually hopefully home, one day a week, especially this time of year. So yeah, I stay pretty busy, but I like it that way, being active and being in competition a lot, I think keeps me sharp. So I prefer to do that, but others kind of have their own way of going about things.
Kyle, I was driving in the day and someone was in the fast lane going like below the speed limit. It drives me nuts when people are doing that. And I once asked Joey Chestnut if he can go to a baseball game and just eat a hot dog because dude can eat like 80 of them in 10 minutes. What's it like for you actually like being on a road, like trying to drive like normally because you're used to going fast and you're always racing everywhere?
Yeah, that's a valid question that we get a lot. You're going 70 to 80 miles an hour probably on the interstate. On the racetrack, we're going 180 to 200 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So you would think that the sensation is like crazy different, right? But really the sensation comes from the flow of the traffic. So, a lot of times, if you're going 70 on the interstate and somebody goes ripping by you at 80, or there's a few people that go, like, it feels like you're going a lot faster. So, yeah, I don't get the feeling ever of like, oh my gosh, I'm crawling on the road you're just going to go in the flow of the traffic
It drives me nuts. I don't know how you guys do it. I was sitting there going, I wonder what Kyle Larson does here in this situation, because it drives me nuts when someone's going slow. What about Kansas Speedway that you do so well at Kyle, because you've won twice here. Obviously it's been a good track for you in the past.
Yeah, no, it's a great track for us and I really enjoy it. It's probably in my top three or five favorite tracks that we get to go to throughout the year. For one, I love the area. I love the state. I love the race fans here in Kansas and in the Midwest. But then the racetrack itself, yeah, it's got progressive banking. You can kind of, there's multiple lanes to run at the track. So you can kind of, if you catch somebody, you can move around and pass them a little easier than some of the tracks we go to. So, it's just fun, and our car is always fast here, so I enjoy coming here and racing, and we're usually up front, which is nice.
I'm curious, Kyle, because with this generation of car, we've seen some crazy finishes like the one a year ago where you just beat out Chris Buescher. NASCAR just announced the rotation of the championship race going forward. Is Kansas a place that you think could or you think would be fitting to have a championship race at in the future?
I mean, it would definitely produce a great race for the finale. Just the only problem is, you know, geographically, November in Kansas, I feel like would probably be a little iffy on weather. So that makes it tricky for our series and picking tracks to race at. You know, you kind of got to go to states that you can be a little more confident that the weather is going to be okay. So, you know, Florida or the West Coast, Arizona, California, you know, potentially like Texas, probably not even Texas, but Kansas, I don't know. I just think, you know, you'd hate to see it raining or snowing or freezing temperatures or whatever, and you know, delaying the race or anything like that. But it would for sure be the best probably racetrack. I would say Kansas or Homestead would be the best, you know, quality racing to decide a champion.
You mentioned, you know, your schedule and how busy you can be. I'm curious, with you trying to do the double again this year with the Indy 500 and the Coke 600, does it make your schedule, does it make you feel like your schedule is any more hectic with all the things that you have to do in terms of going back and forth in that week in particular? Or does it just feel like relatively similar to what you're used to with going to different tracks and doing different races throughout the season while also managing your regular cup schedule?
Mm-hmm. Well, honestly, I think for your a normal guy doing the double, it might be busier, but for me, it's really not. It's kind of opposite. There's less back and forth than you think. You know, like I'll race here at Kansas this weekend, and then I'll head to Indy Sunday night, and then I'm there, you know, Sunday night through Sunday, I think, where, you know, then I'll go to North Wilkesboro to run the All-Star race and then come back. And then I'm back in Indy for pretty much the whole week, and then go to Charlotte on Saturday, practice, qualify, come back to Indy, race, go to Charlotte and race. Where, you know, a normal week for me, like I mentioned earlier, you know, I'm gone early in the week, you know, racing dirt races, you know, sprint cars and stuff. So for me, the 2 weeks that I'm in Indy is like the only time all year I'm actually in the same spot for multiple days in a row. So it's actually pretty nice for me and really relaxing. That was, you know, surprising last year for me. And then I think for everybody, when I described it to them, that like my schedule was way easier last year than it typically is throughout the year.
Have you ever thought about F1, Kyle? Patrick Mahomes of the Chiefs is invested as a part owner in an F1 team. I know that would be challenging with your schedule, but I'm just curious because you do like to run everything. Have you ever considered that?
Well, I mean, no, because realistically, I'll never have an opportunity to race in Formula One. The FIA makes it really difficult to even get a license to race. So you have to like earn points to get a license. And, I think the FIA doesn't think very highly of American auto racing. So you don't get the opportunity to gain points to even qualify for a license. And then even if I did, like, that's not my background. So it would be difficult for me to get a ride, and you're not going to be in a top ride or anything like that. So no, I don't think I would ever get the chance to do it. But you know, it is what it is. That was never really my dream either. You know, growing up, my dream was always to, you know, race in the NASCAR Cup Series and, you know, someday down the road compete full time in a nationally touring sprint car series. So I'm pretty content doing what I'm doing.
You just like to drive. That's awesome, man. You like to do this in your spare time. Good luck today with the first pitch out of Kauffman Stadium. Yeah, I mean, it's good that you practice too, because again, social media can be the devil sometimes.
Well, if I screw it up now after practicing, that's going to look really bad. So hopefully it goes smooth for me.
Good luck, Kyle. Enjoy your time in Kansas City. Good luck at the race this weekend.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
There you go. Kyle Larson right there with us.
Good stuff. You know, I think he's, in terms of the racing side of things, somebody mentioned on the text line real quick before we transition, Bink, that somebody said that he could be, that Mike Joy, of course, the guy that does the Fox broadcast, you'll be able to hear him if you're not going to the race, on Sunday, that he could be one of the top five drivers of all time, like, period. And based on what he's been able to do in terms of the racing in different series, like, Christopher Bell does a little bit of that as well. I think NASCAR is interesting because they, similar to how the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes, like, hey, man, we don't want you doing too much during the offseason. Like, you need to take care of your body. We need you ready to do your job for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Stoney used to do that, too, you know, all the time.
I think that's NASCAR's in that frame of mind, I think, where some people, like Rick Hendrick historically, has been like, yeah, I don't want you doing anything but racing for my team. I don't want you doing any extra. Where Kyle Larson has bent that rule a little bit with Hendrick and going on and doing the sprint races, obviously, which he's the dirt races, which he's so good at, as well as Christopher Bell. Really good stuff. So thank you for getting a driver on, Bink. I know we were working on it. It's nice to be able to get somebody.
Well, Tony Stewart used to race a lot of these dirt races, too. Like, he just likes to race. Like, do you think downtime, they'd want their downtime? He likes to go race in dirt races. Yeah. And sometimes they use fake names when they go do it.
Some drivers are just all about the grind. Like, you know, some guy, like, if you hear a guy, this guy just loves football, you know?
Oh, it's a love racing guy.
Very, 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 very similar in that regard. Logan, we got to get you out to a race, man, because I think that it's a lot different from watching than actually going. And even if you're not fully interested, I think the fan experience that you get at a racetrack, and Bink, I think, can back me up on this, is as good as you'll see in any sport at all in terms of, like you said, being able to go to like race the little cars. Mm-hmm. They've also got the sims now at the track where you can go and do a sim lap around Kansas. They've got the haulers there with all the gear and stuff. There's meet and greets with the drivers. You get to bring your own beer, bring your own whatever, and it's not a problem. You know, you can bring whatever you want to at the races. I think it's more affordable than your traditional football game or anything like that. So in terms of the actual experience of going to a race, it's pretty freaking awesome being able to feel like the thunder in your chest a little bit, you know, and see those cars do what they do.
It's been a while. I mean, again, I don't think I've been to a race of that magnitude. I mean, a sprint car race or, you know, an actual NASCAR race ever. Like I said, I went to nationwide races when I was little, so I'd have to take a look at it. But even those nationwide races, you would get a good crowd together for something like that. I went and watched a couple of, you know, I like watched them race the pole and do those things, but with qualifying, but I'd never actually been to a complete like NASCAR sprint car series race.
He does like other races, but he hasn't thought about Formula One. I get it, man. A lot of times they're in, you know, Monaco and Bahrain and all these other places. That'd be tough to do, but there is a lot of American races now with the one down in Texas and Vegas and Miami. So there are opportunities, Drew. But of course, he says getting a license tough. But I was curious because you know he wants to drive one of those cars.
Yeah, and I think Kyle's right. And this is no shot at the FIA. Not that it matters, and not that they care what I think, but they don't like American drivers that much. I think that's pretty plain and simple. Our reputation to them is not very good, whether it be the actual driver side of things or whether it be the ownership side of things or whatever the case is. You know, I think that they have a preference, and we're not that, and American drivers are not that preference, I guess is the best way that I can put it, which is where, look, IndyCar is doing very well. NASCAR this past Sunday outdrew F1 in Miami, and they were in Texas in terms of viewership. And F1 was on ABC. So, I mean, NASCAR is doing pretty good now. You know, people criticize it a lot for some of the racing that we see and all of that, but there's always things that people can fix. It's almost like the same with people complaining about the small little things, even though they don't matter that much.
Have you ever missed a race since you've been here?
No.
I didn't think so.
I've gone and I've hung out.
I didn't think so.
If I can go on Friday or Saturday, then I'll go on Friday or Saturday. This was going to come up yesterday, but I've got a college football itch, guys, and you guys are college football fans, so I feel like this is the perfect time to scratch that itch a little bit. So Greg McElroy, former Alabama quarterback, does a great job of calling games for ESPN, came up with his
Dust Dog.
We're coming up with the top 25 lists, the way to release this, the top quarterbacks, this and that. Greg McElroy ranked the top 25 coaches, and Logan, you're not going to be too happy with this list based on your fandom. I'm not mad because I know that Luke Fickell's not a top 25 coach in college football right now, but
he was at the Natty.
All three local schools, Drinkwitz, Kleiman, and Leipold, were all included in Greg McElroy's top 25, and I think there's a case that you could maybe even argue some of these guys deserve to be bumped up a couple of spots based on where they're ranked, but Greg McElroy has Lance Leipold at 17, Coach Drinkwitz at Mizzou at 15, and then Coach Kleiman at 14. Again, this is the top 25 coaches in college football. I don't know if you guys agree with this list. If you don't, if you think this should be higher, I know you think Kirk Ferentz should be in the top 25. I agree with that, Logan. you were also mad that, that Matt Campbell was included in there. Obviously, Iowa State. You know,
yeah,
you
this list sucks. Mm. This list is awful. Uh-huh. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Greg. Deion Sanders at 22. But the dean of college football is not on the list. Okay,
we'll see what Deion does. Deion did bring a program back from the dead.
Yeah, but Kirk Ferentz, to Logan's point, there have been few programs, and I think Iowa State Iowa fits in the same category as Kansas State in terms of its consistent relevance in college football. Iowa, when's the last time Iowa was actually irrelevant in college football? Some might think they are based on how they play offense, but if you look at how they play against the best teams and in terms of their record, they are one of the most consistent college football teams in the country.
Iowa hasn't had a losing record since 2012. They have been to a bowl game every single year since 2013.
And that's one of the few losing seasons they've had with Kirk Ferentz.
They're consistent, but is it someone that puts you over the hump? That's the question. He deserves to be in there. He's always good.
Yeah, but
he's taken
him to four BCS bowl games.
In fairness, Bink, is Matt Campbell somebody that's going to put Iowa State over the hump? He's a really good coach.
When they hired him out of Toledo, I was like, okay, this is going to be the dude.
That's because you love the...
He's churning out NFL players, too. I mean, Brock Purdy there. This year, Jalen Noel, Park Hill, that got drafted by the Texans. Wiggins got drafted to the Texans as well. He's churning out NFL talent.
That's because you're a Mac guy. Logan and I are Big Ten guys. You're a Mac guy because you like Jason Candle out of Toledo right now as well.
I do like him.
Just so happens that he's also a Toledo coach.
I like Pinkel.
You have something for Toledo.
I cannot.
All time winning coach, Peter.
I cannot look at this. Deion at 22. Lincoln Riley at number 19. Fresh off of USC's 7-6 season. How highly impressive that is. I can't wrap my brain around it. Brett Bielema is at number 16 on this list. I like Brett Bielema, and Bielema's a top 25 coach. But yes, him being on the list and Kirk Ferentz not on the list irritates me to no end.
I think that's a good point.
I can't, and I'm not saying that the Kirk Ferentz should be in the top 10. Iowa is, and somebody in the text line said Iowa is constantly mediocre. Mediocre, I don't think you understand what the definition of that is. Mediocre would be 6-6. He is not a 6-6 head coach.
He has two double-digit win seasons in the last 4 years. If you think that Matt Campbell is an outstanding coach to this texter, Matt Campbell has one double-digit win season at Iowa State, and that was last season.
He's got 8 double-digit win seasons in his career since he took over the program in 1999.
Haven't Caleb DeBoer
three of those in the last 6 years. He's mediocre, super mediocre. I mean, Caleb DeBoer at 6.
That's home cooking.
Has he proven it at Alabama yet,
no.
Greg?
I think that as far as the locals,
he had a good year at Washington.
He's got Jeff Brohm at 8.
Yeah, I think Jeff Brohm is, he's not necessarily overrated as
friend
a coach
of the show, but, Jeff Brohm.
On this list, Bink, he's not the 8th best coach.
I need to breathe a minute.
Dan Lanning is 5, and here's the one thing about Lanning. I actually could see him like down the line, like with the Kansas City Chiefs, to be honest with you. He said he
doesn't want to go to the NFL.
I know, but you can always be convinced. And the NFL is very much like college football now with free agency and the transfer portal. It's never been closer to the NFL than the way it is now. But first job was Park Hill South. Guy loves Kansas City. I don't know. Keep an eye on Dan Lanning. But Kirby Smart absolutely deserves to be number one. Dude always wins, and he's always good.
In terms of the locals, Bink, 17 for Leipold, 15 for Drinkwitz, and Klieman at 14. Would you make any changes to where they're at? Do you think any of them should be bumped up a little bit higher on
the list? Brian Kelly being 9th, I think, is a joke.
I think Brian Kelly's a little bit high at 9, but I think you can make a case for all three of them to be a little bit higher on the list, but in particular, and I don't want to take Mizzou out of this equation, but I think that Coach Klieman and Coach Leipold could be a little bit higher on the list because of the resources that they have compared to that of a Missouri or an LSU or some of these other schools. Like, obviously, they're not going to be in the top 5, I don't think. I mean, if K-State were to go and win the Big 12 and go on to win a college football playoff game, then maybe Coach Klieman actually climbs his way into that top 10 and maybe even flirts with the top 5 a little bit. But for what Coach Leipold has done so far, even though they had an off year last year, and what Coach Klieman has done to continue the consistency at K-State, it feels like they don't get the proper recognition that they do because of what their records are. If you look at the lack of resources, are we sure, Bink, that Coach Drinkwitz, I think he would be, but are we sure that Brian Kelly, if he was coaching Kansas last year, Are we sure that he is any better than what Lance Leipold has been since he got to Kansas?
I don't think so. They've already gone with sizzle and flash before. It's the right hire for the University of Kansas. There were some things out there. Like, where was Spencer Danielson? He took freaking Boise State to the playoffs. That deserves to be on a list. Sorry.
Yeah, I agree.
You take Boise State and you almost had the Heisman Trophy winner.
I agree to some extent because you get the Group of Five gets an automatic bid now. So not that he needs to be taken off the list because
in a home game
it was a but yeah the fact that he had them in the top eight at one point in the country is something that obviously is no slouch. I do think John Summerall deserves to be on the list. Former Troy coach, Tulane did a fantastic job.
And in Drinkwitz's defense, he's the only one of the coaches. He would have made the playoffs in the new format the year before when he went down to beat Ohio State down in Texas in the bowl game. He would have been in the playoffs that year.
Which I think that makes this year. I'm so pumped up for college football. If you haven't tuned into the 249 Miles of College Football podcast, shameless plug, we're going to come out with a new episode next week. There's a lot of stuff to talk about. We haven't had an episode in a couple weeks now. There's a lot to break down regarding some of the recruiting stuff, which Coach Leipold, by the way, Bink, he's doing a nice job in the portal.
He's doing a great job in the portal.
Well. I think I'm really interested for this season because there are Kansas State fans that are putting some pressure on Chris Klieman, think that he needs to be better than he is. Avery Johnson is got a full season as a starter under his belt. How good could he be?
Howard syndrome.
Could he elevate himself, Bink, into that top category of quarterbacks where he could come out in the draft? Obviously, Jalen Daniels coming back with Kansas. Can they bounce back with a good schedule? Missouri, very similar schedule, Bink, as they had last year. Almost identical outside of the non-conference opponents. But the quarterback question, is it Pibula? Is it Horn? Who's it going to be
exactly? He's a stud. He was a stud at Penn State. We'll see how he's going
to
do.
I'm very excited to see how those things go for the locals. And then, of course, Missouri State is in the FBS. We'll see how they do. They're not bowl eligible because of the dumb rules that the NCAA has. Yeah.
They won't make a bowl game.
They won't make a bowl game anyway.
In fairness, we saw it with some of these other schools that have moved
up.
There's
finally two FBS teams in the state.
I'm never saying never.
I'm excited for the Bears. I am. And I think that they can get there at some point. Ryan Beard, the head coach at Missouri State, great guy. I got to develop a relationship with him during my time in Springfield. He's the right guy to lead this program.
Not Petrino.
But to go from the Missouri Valley to Conference USA, and they were a ho-hum average team. You know, they hovered around 500 every year in the Valley. They had a better year this year than they did the previous year. Mm. But
you're saying it might be more like a Sam Houston situation where they go 3-9.
I hope they win a game or two in Conference USA this year. Yeah, I mean, look, their non-conference schedule is impossible.
USC on the road, Marshall on the road, and then they host SMU.
Yeah,
and then they host UT Martin.
Yeah,
they better win that game.
They better win that game against UT Martin.
How about they still want Bobby Petrino, who is their offensive coordinator? How bad they want him?
Can we stop talking about Bobby Petrino?
I'm just saying how bad they want him to be the head coach there, though.
They don't.
Guess what? He's not the coach, though, Bink. So I know he's in Arkansas.
Bobby Petrino can't stay anywhere longer than 5 minutes. Quite literally, he was the head coach. He was the offensive coordinator at UNLV for like 3 months.
Yeah.
Like long enough to buy a house.
Well, don't forget the Falcons. And then Jimbo
Fisher gave him a call and was like, hey, can you come be the OC at Texas Tech? And he's like, sure. He was at Texas Tech for a year. Everybody got fired. Now he's back at Arkansas waiting for Arkansas to ultimately fire their guy so we can try to get back into the head coaching job. I got to do this. I got to get this off my chest. Mizzou fans aren't going to like this. Okay, we're talking about this list. Eli Drinkwitz is the number 15 coach in college football according to this list. So I just want to throw a number out there for everybody, a couple numbers. So since 2020, when Eli Drinkwitz took over the Mizzou program, right? He's 38-24, he's 22-20 in the SEC in the last 5 years since he took over at Mizzou. In that same 5-year stretch, Kirk Ferentz at the University of Iowa is 36-20, and he's 29-13 in the Big Ten.
I think there's some recency
bias. He's got a better record over the last 5 years.
I think there's a case there. I think it also is recency bias, where I know that Iowa.
Of course, it is. Dion's in here.
Nasty work.
Somebody asked where Mario Cristobal was there. He is 20th on the list. Behind him to again do top 25. Behind him at. After 20 is Kalani Sitake, Dion.
He couldn't win with Cam Ward.
Kurt Cignetti at 23, Rhett Lashley at 24, and then Kenny Dillingham at 25. I mean, it's hard to make a case that any of these guys should not be in the top 25. So where does Kirk Ferentz fill? But I think that Kirk Ferentz should also, you think Kirk Ferentz, he should be in the top 25 as well.
I just, this so list is crazy to me.
Maybe you take out Kalani Sitake.
There's five Big Ten coaches on this list. Top 25 coaches in America, only five of them are from the Big Ten. And those five include Lincoln Riley from USC, Brett Bielema at Illinois, and then the other three I have no problem with. James Franklin at Penn State, you've got Dan Lanning at Oregon, and Ryan Day at Ohio State.
I think Lincoln Riley's the one where you could say he hasn't been top 25 the last couple of seasons because it's just kind of been underwhelming what he's been delivering with his programs. I understand the Brett Bielema stuff. I don't know if you've seen this.
They're going to be good this year.
Oh, Kurt Cignetti's on the list as well. Yeah. I'm sorry, six. Kurt Cignetti out of Indiana with one good year at Indiana.
He got his butt beat by Notre Dame in the playoffs.
I was going to say, Bink, I don't know if you've seen this either, Logan. Illinois might be really, 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 really good this year.
I think they're going to be good. I think this, a couple of years ago they had one of the best defenses no way talked about in the country, but this year they'll be good.
Give Illinois a lot of credit. And I'm a Brett Bielema guy.
I hate saying that because I hate Illinois.
Altmaier's coming back?
Yeah. I'm a Brett Bielema guy, in case you guys just, you know. For
former Wisconsin guy, which they had Arkansas.
Yeah, he was. Do you know where he played college football, Drew? Do you know where Brett Bielema played college football?
No.
I'll give you a hint. He's got it tattooed on his calf. Look up Brett Bielema calf tattoo. Why don't you answer that one for me real quick?
Do you know where the head coach of Arkansas went to played college football? Sam Pittman?
I do not.
Pitt State.
I mean, is it Northwest Missouri State?
Let me see here.
No, Brett Bielema. Iowa. Yeah, Brett Bielema played football at the University of Iowa. He's got a Tiger Hawk tattooed on his leg.
He's a Big Ten guy. I mean, the only mistake he made was going to Arkansas.
That's true. He never should have left Wisconsin.
Yeah, well, Wisconsin should have never got rid of Paul Chryst either, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, they thought Paul Chryst was going to be Brett Bielema, and he wasn't quite Brett Bielema.
Wisconsin's going to run the ball more, though, so I think we're excited about that. Sure. I am so pumped up, though, about college football this year, though, Bink, because K-State's going to be in the running. KU could bounce back. Mizzou, theoretically, should be in the run to at least get a good bowl game, at the very least, if not contend for the playoff. But obviously, the SEC is the SEC, so makes it tough.
Also, Willie Fritz, by the way, played at Pitt State, too.
He's turning around the Houston program.
Head coach Houston.
Okay.
Got a couple of Pitt State guys in college football. Good stuff, Drew. I can't wait for your podcast. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, we are back at it.
So you're back at it every week now?
Not every week. Every couple weeks. And then once we hit June, that's when we're going to really get into the conference previews. I got my college football preview coming out in August. So,
which, by the way, you put a lot of time in this because you look at every single Division I team.
All 130.
He puts a sheet out. He should sell this.
All 136 teams get 2 pages in my preview. It's over 280 pages.
He should monetize this.
Who needs Phil Steele?
It's a lot of work.
Who needs Phil Steele when we got Drew Nixon over here?
I'm no Phil Steele. I love Phil Steele.
His guide's coming out in about a month. I don't know about you, Logan, but I go out every June and buy college football mags. I know I could look it up and look online, stuff like that, but there's nothing better than having a hard copy.
Oh, 100%.
Of college football magazine.
True.
I even had Drew's last year. Drew even afforded me the file for it.
Yeah, it was free last year.
Put a lot of work in for free.
Yep. Nice. Well, we'll have to see if things change this year, but yeah.
What they do. Come up next, though, Chiefs Red Half Hour.
With Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5. The Fan.
Welcome back, Chiefs Red Half Hour. Jay Binkley, Logan Weber. Drew Nixon producing the operation. Man, I love the words Chiefs Red Half Hour. I've said this all week. I'll say it again tomorrow, Logan. Can't wait for that. But the Kansas City Chiefs, I know we've talked a little Chiefs. When can you talk Chiefs? You can talk Chiefs anytime you want because the NFL is a 12-month-a-year
thing. It works 365, 100%.
It really does. But as far as the offseason program, they're now in phase two for the Kansas City Chiefs. The national media, I think they get directives. Right, pick against the Chiefs and make a good case of why not. Because that has to happen, right, Logan? I mean, they're not naturally thinking that, are they? I mean, these guys know football. They're not naturally wanting the crap on the Chiefs, are they?
Not most of them, no. I mean, there are people out there, right? And I'll give respect to those who pick against the Kansas City Chiefs for, you know, reasonable reasons. Like Mark Schlereth, right, on Fox Sports.
Oh,
right,
he hates the Chiefs.
Breakfast Ball on you know, weekday mornings. He's a Broncos guy. His hatred for the Chiefs is well-founded. But for others who hate the Chiefs just because the Chiefs win, or whatever reason you might have, I don't have respect for your opinion. And there are going to be folks in the national media who are going to pick against the Kansas City Chiefs. Number one, because it doesn't make for interesting television nationally for everybody to just be like, oh yeah, the Chiefs are the best team in football, and say that every show's over, right? You've got to have a cause for debate or discourse. And so there are going to be people that, hey, peel back the curtain, go a little inside baseball. Sometimes people don't always say things that they mean to try to drum up a conversation or produce entertainment value, unless you're Skip Bayless, who's just a downright moron and says things to say things. I think that there are people that are going to pick against the Kansas City Chiefs because they reasonably believe that, or they can't stand the Chiefs, or there's going to be plenty of people out there that are going to do it because they think it's going to cause some sort of a rift.
Or be like Colin Cowherd, that'll be pro and con. He'll be for them and then against them, then back for them at some point.
Yeah. What did you guys see? There's a list on from ESPN, every remaining hole for each NFL team. And the whole the position they put was left guard.
That's understandable. We got to replace Tooney.
I know, but Bink, I don't think they've listened to what Brett Veach and Andy Reid have said. Because throughout this entire offseason, they have said it'll be a competition at left guard between Kingsley and Caliendo. That's what they've said. And Brett Veach has mentioned they like Kingsley at left guard. So I understand that you need to replace the guy, but this is all, if you've listened to what Andy Reid and Brett Veach have said, they've suggested multiple times that this is going to be a competition, and it's going to be between Kingsley and it's going to be between Caliendo to see who gets that spot based on things that they've said about Kingsley and just in regards to the position itself. Where, I mean, if there's another position of need, I don't know if you need to necessarily fill a hole, but, you know, looking at other positions, I wonder if there are not bigger needs necessarily that stand out, but going forward, is there anything that they haven't addressed that they should? That you think?
I think the left side of the line remains the biggest question mark, obviously. Jalen Moore coming in from Frisco, the five starts behind Trent Williams, but you still have question marks, and you should have question marks about that. And I always thought replacing Tooney, easier said than done.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's an all-pro for a reason.
Of course.
The guy's considered the left best guard. Now, he did struggle once he got to the Super Bowl playing left tackle because his arms are short. He's a guard.
Yeah,
that's what
absolutely.
He is. And he's been playing out of position. He did well against other teams until you got to that elite front of Philadelphia. He was good until then. But still, you're replacing the left side. So you should be concerned about that because you can't just say, you know, immediate fix is drafting Josh Simmons. He's got the injury. Not 100%. You can't just pencil him in right now. Jalen Moore, there's justification. There's reason for him to be good. Former fifth-round pick out of Western Michigan, a big opportunity for him to be good and get paid in the NFL.
Yeah.
So you're once again getting guys with good reason to be good. And Kingsley, who knows? People were real high on him at tackle last year. I was skeptical about it. The second round, I think, was good for him. Definitely not first round. I think that would have been a waste had they done Kingsley. And you clearly saw him on some mocks last year going in the first round of the Chiefs, which I think would have been a mistake for the Chiefs to do that. But yeah, left side of the line is a question mark and should be because a lot of the team is the same. Your tight end, still Kelsey. Your backfield at this point, probably still going to be Pacheco and Hunt, even though you'll see some Breshard Smith at times, which I think is an upgrade. But I like P. Ryan and what he did for the Chiefs, to be honest with you. But didn't get the job done, but they did get the Super Bowl and they did win 15 games. So there's going to be, and guys are a year older, mm-hmm. which in the NFL, that does matter. So, yeah, I think the left side of the line is the biggest question mark. You think you got answers, but we're not going to be sure until they actually play games.
I mean, you could say the same thing about D tackle, though. Like, we don't know about Omar Norman Lott. Like, you lose Turk Wharton, who had 8 sacks last year.
And Derek Nnadi.
Yeah, and here's Turk Wharton, a guy that was undrafted at Missouri S&T. You know what I'm saying? Things happen.
I understand that you might think that the position isn't good, but in terms of the big of a whole, the Chiefs, I think, believe full-on, they full-on believe that it's going to be, that they like Kingsley at the spot, and they think they have the answer. I don't think any of us think that he can, one, we don't know, but two, based on what we saw last year, they don't have a guard that's got that's the caliber of Joe Tooney, obviously. But does that mean that the hole isn't filled? Like, if we've heard what the Chiefs have said, I don't think that
just because there's a guy, I don't think it's filled, Drew.
I don't know if that's the biggest hole necessarily, because there's other positions you can pinpoint to that they've addressed, but you could also argue there's nobody, like, who's replacing Turk Wharton? We still don't know if it's Omar Norman Lott. You'd like it to be because they picked him in the second round, but that, I mean, Jaden Hicks is supposed to fill the read of the void of Justin Reed. It's supposed to, like, you think it's filled, but is that actually filled? Like, or cornerback too? Like, we think it could be Noel Williams or Christian Fulton. If Noel Williams is ready to go, they picked him in the third round. I think it's only a conversation just because it's Joe Tooney they're replacing as opposed to somebody else. But you can make a case. I think defensive line, interior defensive line is, I mean, if they struggle against the run, all of a sudden in the interior, that was their strong suit last year. So, I mean,
no 100-yard rushers except for a guy that was a quarterback, Lamar Jackson, that had 122. That was it.
Yeah, I just wonder if it's actually their biggest hole. Like, it looks that way, but based on what the Chiefs have said, it doesn't sound like they believe that left guard is a hole that needs to be filled. Or they believe it's a hole, I guess, that needs to be filled, and it's going to get filled by Kingsley or it's going to get filled by Caliendo, and they're content with that because they haven't done anything to address that interior offensive line position like that.
One thing on the defensive line they did do is they went heavily after guys that get to the quarterback. Norman Lott's win rate, I mean, even limited snaps, was the best in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Gelati had more pressures than anybody in college football. I mean, there's a reason why they selected who they did, because they can get to the quarterback, because they went to 18th last year in sacks. They were number two in the NFL the two previous seasons, so they obviously see the value in that. That's something that they want to do. But, yeah, just to expect the offense, they did struggle at times. Yes, they won games, a lot of one-score games. They did win them, but they had to be perfect down the stretch to do that. But you're expecting health. You're expecting Hollywood Brown to be healthy. And Hollywood Brown doesn't exactly put together full seasons. He never has. It's not what he does. He's oftentimes out. Rashee Rice is going to miss games. We know that from the suspension. So then can you deal with an injury? So is Jalen Royals the whole answer for that? I still have my question marks at wide receiver, even though on paper they look very good.
I'll answer for this. They put it as they phrase it position of need as left guard. A position of unproven left guard, position of need, no. I'm sort of in the same boat that you're in, Drew. Honestly, if there was a position of need, a position that the Chiefs could go look at a free agent or a trade possibility to try to answer a question, I still think it's running back. I don't like what the Chiefs did this offseason at running back. I don't like it at all. Re-sign Kareem Hunt, I guess. I don't think Isaiah Pacheco is your guy. I don't think he's your answer. I don't think he is a perennial 1,000-yard rusher, which I think you need in today's NFL. Even though the Chiefs don't like to run the football a whole lot, that's not Andy Reid's philosophy. I get it. With the two high safety looks, teams are going to have a competent running game. And I don't think Isaiah Pacheco is a 1,000-yard rusher. He doesn't exhibit a ton of vision. He's coming off the injury issue, right? He's not the most powerful runner in short yardage situations. Kareem Hunt is on the other side of 30. He's a short yardage back. Breshard Smith is a gadget guy out of the backfield. And unless he can prove otherwise, I don't like at all what the Chiefs did at the running back position this year.
It's not true for three down back that you drafted. You drafted somebody in the seventh round.
No, you haven't had one since Kareem Hunt was here the first time.
And this was a draft to do it because this was the best class. Chiefs even said that. It's the best class is the running back class. And I agreed with Drew and Rob. They did a segment yesterday where we talked about the success of seventh round running backs. Like Pacheco's on that list because he's over 900-yard rusher. But seventh-round running backs traditionally haven't been very good. But the problem is, seventh-rounders this year probably going fifth round and years before. I agreed with Rob on that. Seventh-rounders this year probably going the fifth round and before. You can get undrafted guys, you know, that have had success in the NFL. This year was different. It was a loaded class. We'll see what they do. I'm just saying you have to find that explosiveness. And you have to count on injuries. They've been lucky across that offensive line.
They've
been lucky across that. And not only that, give Patrick Mahomes the time. Give him the time where he's not worried about being planted on the ground and he can deliver the football downfield. Being a running back for the Chiefs should be a luxury because early on with Mahomes, you're not seeing eight-man boxes. You're not. You're seeing guys back up, too high safety. Look, you're creeping up now when the Chiefs aren't throwing deep because 2 years ago they didn't throw deep at all. Last year a little bit more, but they haven't the last couple of years. They've been inside 10-yard box.
That's because they were seeing two deep safeties.
But that's where that running back,
of the time.
A good running game supplants that. And so teams, if they do that, then start creeping up to stop the run because they respect it. opens up things down the field for Patrick Mahomes.
But we know that, because I think we, like last year, at least Alex and Cody and I, we were, I'm sure you guys felt the same way. We were like saying it till we were blue in the face. Like, they need to run the football just a little bit more. Like, they just don't, that's just not what Andy Reid does. And
well, Kareem Hunt did lead the NFL in rushing, so they did run a lot that year.
I know, but how long ago was that?
It was rookie year.
I mean, things changed.
So like, been what, 17?
Yeah, I mean, that was 8 years ago, Bank.
I'm just saying they have done it.
I just think that based on what we've seen in the last 3 to 5 years, it has been a pass-heavy offense, and they don't utilize the run enough. And to your point, Logan, I don't know if they have a running back where they can utilize that in a effective nature, where, to your point, Banky, they use the run to help set up things a little bit more down the field. That's just not what they do.
You don't want to be predictable either. Third and one, here comes Kareem Hunt.
Well, of course,
you know,
not.
Third and long, Rashard Smith's in the game. Right. You don't want to be predictable in what you do.
And in fairness, though, if you need to get 1 yard and you're running, you should be able to get 1 yard. And we talk about the short yard situations and the problems that they've had
but
over the years.
But they won't do it because Mahomes' knee.
I know. It's not even the sneak thing. If you're going to run, if you're running the ball with Kareem Hunt, like a running back dive, like playing Madden, right up the middle, you should be able to get a yard.
With this offensive line,
happens, but
you know, behind Humphrey and Trey Smith, yeah, you should be able to.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there's no excuse for them to be on a third and one and not be able to get that 1 yard.
They utilize the tush push, just not at the line of scrimmage with the quarterback. It's beyond that.
Because I think Rashard Smith is fine and can contribute, but I get people's frustration where you see a running back that could be available earlier on, like a Dylan Sampson was a popular pick for everybody here. Obviously, the local guys with Devin Neal and DJ Giddens. But you see a back that could be effective and a home run hitter, RJ Harvey type of guy. I think Rashard Smith could potentially be that guy, but you would have liked maybe the Chiefs to get somebody that had a higher ceiling like a Dylan Sampson or an RJ Harvey earlier on. But again, it's hard to knock anything that the Chiefs do based on what we've seen over the last 3 to 5 years.
Because the results just been speak going, for themselves.
Exactly. It's really hard to go against anything that they've done, even if it might not be as appealing to the eye for any of us.
But you got to constantly evolve. And at some point, Patrick Mahomes will be 30 years old this season. Not the beginning, but his birthday, what, October, something like that. I think he turns 30. But that's your best weapon. And you'll never have a quarterback of that ilk, probably in my lifetime. Or yours as well, Logan. You're probably not going to see a quarterback with this ilk.
No.
And so you supply him with talent. Give him protection on the line. Look at what Washington's doing with Jaden Daniels. It is ridiculous what they've done on their offensive line and what they're doing at skill positions to help out the quarterback. Because they realize we're going to be good because of this quarterback. And so that's what they're doing to fulfill the needs.
Yeah, I agree. But you can't become so completely one-dimensional. I mean, I got people in the text line. The Chiefs are, the running game in Kansas City is never going to be a thing. They ran the ball 450 times last year. The running game exists in some respect.
It takes pressure off your quarterback. So that
it
does
should be
Mahomes.
More of a thing and than what it has been, I think.
I'm not asking for Derrick Henry I'm not asking for a guy to rush for 1,500 yards on 350 carries for this Chiefs team. I'm asking for a guy that can rush for 1,000, 1,100 yards on 220, 230 carries just to take some of the pressure off. Just to make a first and 10 turn into a second and 5 instead of a second and 8. And now you have to throw the football on second and third down. I just make the team a little bit less predictable and put you in a little bit fewer second and third and long situations by having a guy that you can rely on in 3 down sets.
But as far as having the national media pick against Chiefs, I'm with you though, Logan. If you have a good excuse, if you have a good reason, but picking against the team that goes to 7 straight AFC title games, it's tough to do. It's hard to make that prediction and sound, you know, like you know what you're talking about. And Kyle Brandt even said at the NFL Network, he's like, I'm done picking against the Chiefs. I'm done. You know, I've done there. I've been there. I've picked against them. And they just keep doing it.
Yeah, until somebody can prove that it can be done, until somebody proves that the Chiefs can't get to an AFC championship game, why wouldn't you just continue to pick them to get to an AFC championship game?
You're from the show-me state, so am I.
Show me
you can do it. For Logan Weber, for Drew Nixon, big thanks to Kyle Larson joining us at 11 o'clock. He's throwing out the first pitch at the Royals game today. Josh Vernier comes your way next, the best insider in professional baseball. Vern comes your way next. And, of course, Logan and I be back with Drew tomorrow to talk about everything Chiefs-Royals and a little NASCAR this weekend.